For another week, our esteemed colleague, Christian Corley, with two C's and no K's, is unable to be present. I can't remember his excuse, quite frankly, so in the spirit of any good subordinate, I'll create a lame, pathetic excuse on his behalf. He was feeding his homework to the shooty robot dog thing. No. He was enjoying a private tete a concrete tete in his room with his paving slab girlfriend. Maybe. He was having a BLT with RTD about JNT on the BBC or ITV. Ah, no. He was Adric. No. Victory of the Daleks. No. Time lash. No. I can't stand the confusion in my mind. Bonnie Langford.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's Casterbris podcast, Vindicae. Joining me today will be James McLean. Christian has the day off, and I am, of course, Brian Terranova. So thanks very much for tuning in and listening.
I think we should pause for a second and let people just contemplate and muse over the opening gag, so make sure they get it.
Okay.
Vindicae. You all got it?
Can we do that in editing, James? Can't we?
No. What, have a pause there so they can... No, that would be mean.
You can even insert a better joke if you like, too.
No, right? I like it. I like it. Vindicae, I think it's good. I just felt that we should let people mull over that. And we're done.
Yes, good. This is really where we need those like automated, not automated, those computerized female voices to come in and like say the things that we didn't really mean to say.
Or we could insert a laugh track, I don't know.
Yes, we need a laugh track. That is good.
We need a laugh track just because you guys out there just really don't know when to laugh. You're not laughing enough, so we will tell you where to laugh.
This Casterbris podcast was filmed in front of a live studio audience of a laugh track.
Yes, an unlive studio audience. An unlive studio audience, the best
That'd
type.
That'd be a Doctor Who episode right there, the unlive studio audience.
Mark Gatiss would go for that, I think.
You brought up Mark Gatiss, and I want to bring up a thought I just made yesterday that I want to see what your opinions are on it, and then I'll tell you what's been going on in the
I like how you make thoughts. You don't.
I do make thoughts.
It's an art.
I craft them. It is an art. I'm very skilled with my hands and thoughts. It's very good.
Go ahead.
Not many people can do this in this world, James. Unfortunately, it just doesn't get me paid anymore anywhere I go. I was thinking, okay, there's kind of this thought process going on that the Series 7 might be Stephen Moffat's last.
Right.
Now, just putting aside that it may be his last and forgetting all of those things, I started thinking, who might be a good contender to take the show over? Mm-hmm. And I remember when it first was coming back, before they announced Russell, they said it was coming back. And, or actually even before they said it was officially coming back, I remember a couple people were vying for it at the BBC. And the one contender that I really wanted to see back in the day was Mark Gatiss.
Oh, interesting, right?
And now I'm thinking, like, certainly after seeing some of his episodes and hearing his opinions, he still seems like who is not quite the way he wants it yet. And I'm very interested still to see how he would do it because he's written episodes for other people. So I wonder how his episodes would be if he was in charge himself.
So elaborate, what does Mark generally stand for with where he sees who, as you understand it?
I don't know if I can necessarily say what he stands for. I think like my exposure to him mainly is Big Finish. Okay, I haven't really read any of his books or anything, but it was his Big Finish stuff. It was the way he talked about who, and certainly kind of in an odd way, I'm throwing in his three BBC sketches that he did.
Yes, I know the ones.
You can tell he's clearly got a love for the show and that he clearly knows the characters. Certainly when he writes like the Fifth Doctor plays and so on. I don't think they quite let him go near Sylvester or Colin anymore since those three comedy sketches. But but anyway, he definitely has a feel for the Doctor and a feel for Doctor Who. And the one thing is I know that his strengths are generally like Victorian era and so on. But I just think he has great ideas, like this upcoming script, Night Terrors. It looks like a brilliant idea, and it makes me wonder, like, was that Stephen or was that Mark? Mm. You know, and I know generally Stephen, like Russell, told everybody this is the idea, roll with it. But it seems like something that he would have written without being under Stephen's thumb, you know, without him being the leader of the show. And I don't know, it's just when I listen to his stories, he just seems to have a good grasp of Doctor Who to me.
There's certainly an argument that, I mean, he's obviously very close to Stephen, particularly over with Sherlock. that if Stephen did backstep from Doctor Who, maybe someone like Mark would be a very obvious contender to come forward and take the reins. Is there an argument that, and people might contend me with this, and we'd have to have a contentious track of booing and growling people inserted here. Is there, could you argue that being a good writer or understanding a show makes you a good series producer? Is that necessarily in tandem? Because I'm not quite sure personally.
Yes.
I think Moffat is a better writer than he strikes me as, and this is where I mean this is contentious, because some people would totally disagree with me on this. I personally feel that he is a better writer than he seems to be as a producer.
I think it's kind of like not really a straightforward answer. I think it's more so a yes and no situation. I see where you're going with Stephen, and I can actually agree to an extent. Like, while I am enjoying his series, I do think that maybe he definitely is better at stories, like you were saying, rather than overall arcing. And I know I spoke to a couple people recently who definitely felt the same. They're not enjoying his era anywhere near as much as David Tennant's era, for that particular reason. Like they said, like watch his era. He doesn't tell stories. Like, there isn't a story. It's all connected and linked together, which I don't completely 100% agree with, but I do see where they're coming from. Now the thing is, being a fan taking over a show, being a fan of the show and taking over the show, I can see that you would treat it with the respect that it needs. But the thing is that the smart ones, like Russell, go back to him for a moment, knew that you can't just recreate the same old thing. You have to take it into a new era, and that means taking chances sometimes. And sometimes those chances didn't pay off. But by and large, I think he did a good job as a fan, being respectful to the show. That said, someone as a newcomer coming into the show and taking it over, we've seen that a lot in the past.
Yeah.
And, you know, because, I mean, I can't imagine there are that many Doctor Who fans in the past series that just said, hey, I'm dying to take over this show, you know, and they found new and interesting ways to tell grand stories. I mean, look at Tom Baker's era. You know, we were talking, one of the old podcasts, you and Christian were talking about the second series for each Doctor.
Yeah.
And, you know, you guys nailed some certain things. Like, Tom Baker's was one of the strongest second seasons. It was really well done, and they weren't Doctor Who fans coming in. They were people interested in making good TV. So I think technically, there isn't a yes or no answer for it. You can get someone who's going to treat the show with the respect that it deserves either way, I guess, is my point. But the question is, can you be sure of the person that you're going to be getting?
Cause, I mean, I think what I'm wondering is that I think Russell T. Davis was a man who put his love for Doctor Who second to actually his series producing role. And to a certain degree, I imagine Moffat probably does the same. I'm very careful that I'm not judging either of them, especially Moffat, because I'm not read anything really that he said as much as I've read of Russell T. Davis. We've both read his writer's tale, haven't we? And you know, the details he goes into how he does Doctor Who. But I always find with things like series production, from what I've read and what I've seen, to be a series product in the sense that you're actually there in a creative capacity as well, you've got to be fairly insane. And I always got that impression with Davis, was that he was that sort of insane, that he just lived it. I couldn't imagine him doing what Moffat's done and actually separating out and doing another totally different project like Sherlock, because you've got to be absolutely totally in that zone with Doctor Who, I think. And I wonder with Mark Gatiss, and I'm not saying he couldn't, I'm just saying I don't know at all, is as a series producer, do you need to be more than a fan? You've got to be that sort of insane producer type who puts the fan aside to a certain degree and looks at what they can do with a show as a product. And I think, to be fair to Moffat, I think he's done that. I think this year, there's obviously been a drive, as we've said before, towards America, and it feels like it's grown up a little from where it was last season. It's got darker.
Sure.
So clearly he's actually decided on a different route to take it. So I think he's a series producer in a way, but I just don't think he's quite the series producer I think Davis was, because I think Davis had that insane, nothing else in the world matters except Doctor Who and its associated spin-offs. That was him. And eventually it seemed to burn him out, which is what you get if you read the final chapter of The Writer's Tale, is of that miniseries year. The guy just feels like he is absolutely, utterly drained, and he has nothing left because he's just been that. So it kills you in the end. But I think that's what I liked about Davis. And the other thing I liked about Davis was the fact that you had Moffat in there. Moffat's tales were always very different to how Davis wrote or how Davis edited as well, how he edited other people's scripts. So when you got a Moffat episode, you knew you were going to get something which was going to feel very different to the rest of the series. So it became like that special nugget. When he's actually producing the series, I've not felt any of those special nuggets from him at all. I know people loved the last episode, as I've said before. I didn't feel it was what I think Moffat can do with a story. As you said, it felt like an arc. It didn't feel like a story. It felt like it was a set piece over on a bigger picture. And right. I like it when he does something more contained. Thank you. And I do miss those. I love Davis's writing, and I agree. I think he pushed the boundaries a lot more, and that was risky, and it didn't always pay off. But Doctor Who should be pushing the boundaries, and I think I do miss a bit of that, and I do miss those Moffat moments.
Yeah, I can agree with that. And I guess two other points is, one, I do remember, and kind of in defense of Moffat here, which is taking a slightly different turn on what we're saying, but in defense of him running the show, even though technically, like we're saying, he's not necessarily writing stories, I felt that the Angel story of Series 5 was a very nicely self-contained story. It did have links to what was going on, as we had found out later, but I thought it worked well, and I know a lot of people were upset with the crack being a resolution to the storyline, but I thought that was very clever to use one thread against the other. I just really liked that writing in that. But my point is, Stephen, on the whole, writing his series, writing his episodes, I don't sit here and feel like he's writing too much. Whereas Russell, I remember getting the feeling, even way back as Series 2, that he was burning himself out, that he should have taken a step back and not written, you know, 5 or 6 episodes a series and have maybe, like, contained himself to a little bit more, less rather. This way he could focus on those scripts solely. It seemed like he was stretching himself thin ideas-wise, and then things suffered. And I know Series 2 is a rough one to go by because, you know, Fear Her shouldn't have been in there, and I know he didn't write it, but it was a last-minute thing, and then Love and Monsters was just kind of like, you know, not working for me, period. But as the series progressed and so on, you get things like The Last of the Time Lords. First two parts were great. Last of the Time Lords kind of really let it down, and it's a shame. If maybe he hadn't written another episode during that series and just focused there, you know, he could have focused all his efforts and turned out a really good script. Whereas with Stephen, whenever he writes a script, even in his run of the series, I don't feel that anything's suffering under him. I do feel that he arcs things perhaps a little too much. On one hand, it's neat, and on the other hand, I do like contained stories, but I don't feel that his stories suffer from him being in charge.
But I do feel with Davis, and I know what you mean, I mean, one argument I've always seen on forums is that I hate this Davis episode. I hate Davis's episodes. I think they're terrible. And yet, Davis was pretty much rewriting all of it. You know, not only was he structuring the whole season and giving the plots out that he wanted done, he was then taking the rewrites, and he was script editing everyone's work as well, except Moffat's. So, you know, in a way, I'm not arguing against you, because in that sense, I'm arguing for you, because he wasn't just writing his own episodes, he was rewriting everyone else's episodes, and he was overseeing Torchwood, and he was overseeing Sarah Jane Adventures as well, and throwing stuff in there. I do wonder whether, yes, he was doing too much, but one thing I did like about that approach was that there was a certain consistency, and I liked that. It felt like every episode, even episodes with writers that I didn't think were as good, or write of his own that I didn't think were so good, I felt his touch in each one. I felt his presence in each one. And that sort of gave me a sort of certainty as to what to expect from Doctor Who. It might have not been specifically what a lot of people wanted out of Doctor Who. Might not have always been what I wanted out of Doctor Who. I was never very interested in the Rose Doctor thing, especially in Season 2, where it just felt awkward. But a lot of people liked it. But you felt you knew where the tonality of the thing felt right. It was him. He felt he was in charge there, like you do with Ron Moore with Battlestar Galactica. And I do find with Moffat's approach, which, as you say, gives you a different flavor, in the sense that you don't feel Moffat in every episode. In that sense, it can be good, maybe. And in some senses, as I say, as in Series 5, it just felt a little inconsistent. I didn't feel him. And I was kind of hoping to go into his series really feeling him. And I think that may be what disappointed a lot of people, was that they'd seen Blink, Girl in the Fireplace, Silence in the Library, and all that stuff. And then they went into his series, and they didn't really feel him there as much as they were hoping to feel him. I don't know. So it'd be interesting, whoever does come in after Moffat, whether they're going to be the sort of insane type who burns out, or they're going to be the type who's a little more stands back and says, you know, I'm not the daddy. I'm here to oversee the creatives and let them do their own work, which is a logical approach as well.
Sure.
I never imagined Moffat going so soon.
Oh, I agree. I definitely think it has been a stronger second season. And you know, that's fairly a common thing a lot of times, because, you know, the actors get more used to their roles. First of all, they get used to the writing style, and then the writers get used to the story method and so on. Plus, he's got a new crew working underneath him, film crew and so on. Not to say that the first season was bad. You know, it's not, I guess it's not that by any means. But yeah, I do get a sense that it's a stronger feeling. Where I'm going, though, is just a step back a little bit. You're saying through the rumor mill, you're hearing certain things and so on. And then we're also seeing on Twitter, we talked about, you know, he's kind of not happy with the BBC for saying what they're saying. And they aren't really talking to each other right now. So I think people are thinking, like, he's leaving because it's not really a comfortable situation, period. You know, he may have done what he wanted to do with Doctor Who. I don't know if he's leaving. I don't expect to, you know, he likes the show a lot. I can't imagine that he would want to leave so soon, but if things aren't comfortable, I can't blame him for not wanting to stay. But my main thing is I remember during, I don't know, it was pretty early on too, but people were saying, and you know, people were mean to Russell T. Davis, and yes. I don't think it's necessarily warranted. I really enjoyed his era, but people were really mean to him and about his writing style. You know, I disagreed with a couple things that he did, but that's nature with TV, you know?
Yeah, I found a lot of the grievances, Russell T. Davis's stuff, a lot of them I always felt were very unfair. There were stuff like the Doctor shouldn't be emotional, and that really bugged me, because to me, Davis's strength was always his character writing. And, you know, once you set up something like the Time War, where you have the mass genocide, well, death of Ray, you know, his enemies he destroys, which is something like Genesis of the Daleks, is something which is against his general rule of thumb. Not only that, he destroys his own people. And you take that sort of concept to start something off with. If you don't play that character emotional, I don't think you're playing the character honestly. Because he is a very human character, regardless of the fact he's meant to be a Time Lord. We've had 30 years of showing that he's more human than human in some respects. He's more of a human than a lot of us should be. So I think what he did was very honest and very true to what that character that we've seen for 30 years would be like if he'd had to take out his enemies and his family at the same time.
And it's not out of character whatsoever. I mean, we saw the first Doctor get very emotional. We saw the third Doctor when Joe left.
Yeah.
We saw the fourth Doctor when Sarah left. The first Doctor when Susan left. Even Vicky. You know, Patrick Troughton at the end when he had to say goodbye to Jamie and Zoe. I mean, like, he's an emotional guy, certainly. It's there. It's always, there's always been a precedence for it. Russell just played more to it, which was a wise idea because it opened you up to a wider audience. Mm. And it told really good stories.
It did.
And that's one thing with him, though. Like, you're talking about, like, you know, maybe burning the candle at both ends type kind of thing with burning himself out with this TV show. The one thing that gets me, and, you know, like I said, I can't say enough, I do enjoy his era, but when you look at things like The Second Coming, and you see the type of writing ability he has, and then you see a couple of his Doctor Who stories that turned out really, like, poor in comparison, is what I can say. Like, they weren't as strong. I wondered if he had the right hat on for Doctor Who. I mean, I know that he tried to write for children as well, which rightfully so, but I don't think that you give children enough credit sometimes these days if you write a children's program rather than writing a family program that kids can totally get.
One thing which people didn't get with Russell T. Davis was perhaps how in tune he was with the family medium more than I think people realized. And ones where I think a lot of Who fans felt he was betraying the fans, he was actually genuinely opening it up to larger audiences. Do you think that the ARC stories are, I mean, obviously we're not series producers, so we don't know the statistics, but are they necessary? Or in such a fact, are they necessary to be strung? Because, I mean, I've watched now, we've watched from 2005, and I've never really enjoyed the Ark stories. And the reason being is that while I actually enjoy individual ones, I mean, I love Utopia, I actually quite like, they do root the Doctor Who down, a bit like the Powell estate did as well. You don't have that feeling of freedom as much in a new show as you did in the old show. You never knew where you were going in the old show. And once you'd been there, you'd go somewhere else. That last place would be forgotten because there would be a new horizon, a more of a final frontier sort of thing. And when you have story arcs which keep rooting you back to one premise, it does sort of make... Do you feel that at all? It sort of makes the series feel less free.
Yeah, I definitely feel that. And I was actually... While you were explaining that, you made me think of... But you're making me think a lot about the story arcs and what I actually took from them and enjoyed. And the one thing that I can think of was the Bad Wolf thing, which it was a last-minute thing. It was kind of shoehorned in there or forgotten about in some scripts, and the payoff certainly maybe wasn't exactly the best payoff. But I remember how fun it was when the first person realized there's this Bad Wolf theme going on, and then you go back and you rewatch all the episodes and you're like, ooh, there it is. And then you look and you look and you look, and it was fun. It was this fun little thing that didn't interrupt the stories you were watching. It didn't have any major ramification at all anywhere. It didn't ruin your enjoyment going through any past stories. And then when you got to the end, there was a fun payoff for it, and it worked. It was interesting. But then you take series three, and you had a more overreaching story arc in that one. You know, even Torchwood was a bit more like Bad Wolf, where it was just kind of, let me just throw this word at you. But series three had a more overreaching one, and I think that one worked and was fun, but didn't need to become the norm, because it was an interesting way to set up the Master, and you were trying to say, well, these events from this point on are going to be linked because the Master is controlling events. When you get to every series having a link because something is controlling the events, then that certainly is not freeing anymore. Those stories aren't contained little episodes, or you don't have the freedom to travel to any planet anywhere because, you know, this thing can find you everywhere. You know, whenever there's these contained stories like the Crack in Time, it makes me sit there and go, well, you know, why didn't we see the Second Doctor ever come across a Crack in Time?
Yeah.
You know, stuff like that. But the Master story arc, that one worked because he was specifically targeting Tennant during this time stream that he found him.
Yeah.
And that one, to me, worked.
I would like to hope that whatever the future holds for the show, that the next series, that perhaps whoever is doing it tries to step away from story arcs, tries to step away from having to have continual plots, and maybe tries to step away from the epicness, which, as we've said before, keeps prevailing in Doctor Who, which I just don't think is necessary. It's nice sometimes to have it where the Doctor is just a wanderer.
Yes.
And to do that, you've got to stop having every season being the end of everything, which essentially every season is.
Absolutely. And then, I mean, it becomes a non-event anymore. It becomes a non-threat.
Yes, it does.
But talking about this story arc, this one, I agree with you, is kind of the worst use of it. It's not a bad story arc. Like, no. Again, credit where credit's due. Moffat is doing really good storytelling. But story arc-wise, as far as those who like their individual stories, this one's a bit worse because not only do you have threads woven without all of the episodes, and then you get to the end for this big payoff of what was going on, you've now taken up two stories in the middle, specifically for the story arc as well. So you've got the first, you've got the middle two, and then you're going to have the last two presumably taking over the story arc again. So you're having more specifically dedicated to it rather than just having threads woven in them. So it's more invasive this time around.
It is, yes. It is a shame. In a way, it's a shame because I've liked how this series has felt more colourful in its landing points. I mean, we've had we've had virtually everything away from contemporary Earth, which is a nice fresh approach. And I think, again, as I've said before, you don't need to go epic to have something which is powerful. I mean, take Sherlock, that last episode of Sherlock, the finale for that mini series was very engaging. It was very powerful. It made you want to come back for more, but it wasn't the end of the world as you know it. And I do feel that perhaps that's missing a little in Doctor Who, is that you, especially Moffat, who is so good at more intimate stories.
And you could say that Russell is, I don't want to say to blame because that's a hard thing, but Russell is sort of the cause of that.
Yes.
Because every time we got to a season finale for him, it was a massive, massive deal. And it was always Earth you know, and it just, there are other ways, you know, there are other, first of all, I don't think that any one story of Doctor Who that they have told has been in any way not a threat or didn't make me feel that the situation needed to be resolved or wasn't a horrible situation. You know, you don't need to do the world is going to end, the universe is going to end. You have the Cybermen on, you know, in Rise of the Cybermen, you know, you have them taking over just that one small planet, you know, and it wasn't our Earth, it was Earth, so it's another Earth in threat thing, but it wasn't the whole universe. It was just what they used to do, alien invasion type stories, and that was fine. You know, it's a great story. That one could have been a season ender, in all honesty, because it was a massive threat. And, yeah. And you know, there were great things at stake, but it didn't have to be the universe is going to end, the Doctor has to sacrifice his life, you know, reboot the universe, this, that, the other, you know. It's just...
I think as soon as you go to a big scale like that, it becomes nonsensical anyway, whether it's a planet, a solar system, a galaxy, a universe, you're going to scales that the brain can't truly comprehend. So you don't need to go to the universe. You can go to the solar system and it's just as a big impact as the universe, because, you know, your brain can't assess sizes of that sort of scale. And I think the sad thing is I remember when you were just talking while you were monologuing and I was listening, I was just thinking of Legopolis and how I know a lot of people hated that, but I kind of felt at the time and watching it through my teens how epic that felt, because it was one of the very few episodes I remember where the universe actually genuinely was at threat, that, you know, bits of the universe were vanishing, you know, Traken goes, it's lost, it's taken out, and that was kind of shocking, because you didn't usually, even Doctor Who, it didn't really go for universe threats, it would go for planet threats, end of this planet, end of this culture. Perhaps maybe a change in time. Pyramids of Mars was obviously quite epic in that sense, but it was still very contained to the Priory. It wasn't really pushing the whole idea of Sutekh taking over everything. It was more that intimate issue. Legopolis was the first that I remember thinking, wow, that's pretty epic, that, you know, the universe is actually falling apart. And as you say, the more you do it, like a surgeon having to deal with blood every day, you become accustomed to it, and watchers come accustomed to it.
Yeah.
So this is what I mean when I say, I think this is what hit me as being where Davis's strong point was. Is I didn't believe that Davis actually enjoyed setting so much on Earth. I didn't believe that Davis necessarily felt that good Doctor Who had going back to the companion's family on the Powell estate. What Davis did was he was able to tap into what would make Doctor Who popular again. And he popularized it by using some very clever tactics which would hit the mainstream audience. Grounding it on Earth would sort of bring a lot, would be a lot more identifiable to a lot of mainstream people, you know, having to see the Powell estate, giving it a family rather than just an uprooted companion. It gave it something which a lot more people could grab, you know, get their teeth into. And of course, it helped with the budget as well. So I think that's where Davis was very, very strong, was in the way that a lot of fans think he wasn't.
I agree.
He took the things which fans wouldn't want to have in the show and put them in there because he knew that that would bring in the people who weren't necessarily fans. And he knew that those were the people who would make or break the show. If it just catered for the fans, it wouldn't be here right now. I'm absolutely convinced of that. It was the fact that he gave it a mania.
Right. He gave it an audience that was bigger than just the people that were enjoying, this shoddy set TV show that we used to love all the time. He gave them that, and they stuck around, even like now. Now, some of them I do know, you know, like any TV show, some of them left when Smith came in.
Yeah.
And, you know, some of them, and this is really generalizing, and it's going to sound terrible, but it's those teeny bopper girls who were in love with Tennant, and they leave because Smith is not as attractive as they thought, while there are women that absolutely love Smith, who think he's a sex symbol and so on. But then there are other people who also got to it, and I don't think it's too far of a stretch to say that Stephen Moffat is telling more sci-fi than drama.
Yes.
While there's drama, he's definitely telling sci-fi, and as a sci-fi fan, yeah, I'm certainly enjoying that aspect, but I can see how a mainstream might start to shy from it. Not that the ratings are necessarily showing that, but I can see how they might get a little bored with that, because while we're enjoying not seeing contemporary Earth, he may need to go back there fairly quickly to kind of bring it back home for some viewers.
I think that's a good point. Interestingly, if we go on to a little of this week's topics, we haven't got that much time, but I think we should do. On Twitter, did he say, I believe on Twitter he actually gave an overall average of the season of being about 10 million, which was interesting. And I think he's put together, he's merging figures from various sources. So it's not just the televised source. He's looking at iPlayer.
Yeah, as I think as well. Certainly.
I mean, I'm not quite sure how that figures. I'm not sure whether how iPlayer, because you can't tell with iPlayer whether someone is watching it who didn't watch it on the show, that essentially they're not watching a repeat.
Right.
I mean, I don't know whether that figure actually takes in that factor that a lot of iPlayer usage, including myself, is people rewatching the show rather than watching it for the first time. So I don't know how many unique visitors to Doctor Who you count on iPlayer.
That is true, but I think it's kind of an important thing to look at. First of all, a lot of people, it's a Saturday night in the warm weather, in comfortable weather, so they want to go out, they want to tape it, they want to TiVo it, they want to DVR it, they want to do whatever, okay? So they don't count in the ratings because they didn't watch it, you know? So those people that were out didn't actually watch it. There are people then that download it the next day from iTunes. Mm. There are people that then watch it on BBC iPlayer. But I don't think, personally, as far as I'm concerned, repeat viewings should be discounted. Because if you're just basing your show on first viewings, that's not really a fair assessment. You have all of these people who would turn into a TV show, and some of them will not like it, but their rating counts because they watched it. They might not come back next week, but their rating counts. True. Whereas if you take something like the BBC iPlayer and someone like yourself or myself who would rewatch these episodes because they were that good, or we want to review them again for some purpose, the show brought us back. That, to me, is a more important thing than the initial day viewings.
That's a very interesting argument. I mean, I know they do the audience appreciation as a separate figure, but we still know deep down in the industry that the viewing figures is what people look at rather than how much people liked stuff. And maybe that is the wrong approach. In this last week, I think it was last Monday, we had a review from the preview. There was a preview in London, which some people got tickets for, where they actually got to see the first episode of Torchwood. And they had I think there was a Q&A there as well. We had an article on Casterbris, which is a good friend of mine, Adam Chamberlain. Yeah, he was, he said that it was very encouraging what he saw. He saw the episode. He said it felt a little American, but he said it still felt very Doctor Who, not Doctor Who, very Torchwood. And he seemed very positive towards it, which is kind of exciting.
That is exciting. And, you know, when you say very American, my first thought, like, I don't look at how the drama is told, even though I know there's a definite difference between American and British drama. And it's a difference that I tend to enjoy British things for. But the one thing that just made me realize what's going on here is it is an American, made for the American audience. So there's going to be commercial breaks cut into it. And it's not going to be like how trying to air an episode of Doctor Who or Torchwood in America, where you have to insert, you have to find places to insert the breaks. Yeah. They're going to have scripts written with breaks in mind. I wonder how that's going to feel, because that certainly would give it an Americanized feel.
Well, I have no problem either way. I mean, because a lot of people feared that it was going to lose the flavor of Torchwood or British drama, because it was going to be Americanized, whatever that means. And by the sounds of it, from what Adam was saying, it sounds like it retains the feeling, which isn't surprising since you've got Davis and Gardner still involved, isn't she? You've got that a feeling to it. You've got them on board. You've got good cast and crew. What he said to me, I can't remember whether he put it in the article or not, was that he felt it felt more like Children of Earth than it felt like previous Torchwood to that. I don't think it's a bad move as well. So with all that said, we're going well over time as usual. Excellent. Well, thank you very much, guys. We'll be talking again next week. Tune in if you're bored, or if you're like me, just a little hot and don't want to actually move. It's very summery here at the moment. Goodbye.
Goodbye.